my guest is Kathy Duffy, who is a holistic nurse with many years of ICU, CCU critical care experience. She is also a certified clinical aromatherapist, instructor, and medical herbalist. But moreover, and more importantly, Kathy is an authentic human being who is sharing unconditional love and sacred relationship with a remarkable population of children. And today we invite her to share her story and their story with all of us. Kathy Duffy, it is my just great privilege to welcome you this morning to Celebrating Whole Health. Hi.
Hi, dear. How are you?
Well, I am much the better for having met you and gotten to know your wonderful story and the extraordinary work that you do with a remarkable population of children. And we want to talk in depth about that, Kathy. First, I just want to let the audience know a bit about your background, which is most impressive. You are very very educated in the holistic arts, and particularly you are a remarkable medical herbalist. Mm-hmm. And you have an herb store that you've been in business since 1978, and you are considered quite an expert in medical herbology. So before we have our discussion and hear the wonderful story of the work you're doing in Ireland with very special children, would you tell us a bit about, we know that you come from a critical care nursing background, would you tell us a bit about the herbalism and the aromatherapy work that you've been involved with as well?
Sure. I've been working in the nursing field since 1965 when I got out of nursing school. And by 1978, I felt literally that I was drowning in death and dying. I felt I was helping people, but I wasn't helping them towards whole or health. And I knew I had to leave the nursing field somehow, some way. And through a series of divine interventions, I was in New York City visiting my sister in November of 1977, and I went with her to an herb store so she could collect her spices. I was just blown away by the power that I felt when I walked into this little place with these dried plants all over, and I said, oh my God, Janet, wouldn't this shop be great like this, a shop like this be great in Northampton, Mass, where I was living? She said, sure, you do it, I'll get you the money. So I said, okay, fine. Now, you have to understand, I'd never made change in my life. I didn't know how to run a register. But I went into this venture. I had no idea that I could fail. It just wasn't an option. I just didn't think I could fail. So pulled family members together, took my 7-year-old daughter at the time downtown into Northampton, searched out a shop front, and asked the fellow if I could put an herb store there. And he said, sure, that would be great. But I had no idea what to do. So family members helped us pull this together, and this was November of 1977. In May of 1978, we opened the herbarium, and it's just been going ever since. It is flying by the seat of our pants with divine intervention, so I just had no clue what we were supposed to make for money, how we were supposed to do this, and we learned as we went. I took herbal studies wherever I could find them. It was an expensive venture for me. It cost me my first husband, and I opened the shop as a single mom with two children on food stamps. But I said, I just didn't think that there was an option to fail. Do you know what I mean?
Well, Kathy, a couple of things to this wonderful story of yours. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you had such a belief in the rightness of the work that you were doing. And then, although you felt that you had left nursing,
yes,
you had actually entered deeper into the nursing process, which
I
is
did.
Totally a remarkable story in and of itself, because your nursing skills, your nursing training, mm-hmm. then integrated with your herbal work mm-hmm. to bring this wonderful nurse educator, this nurse facilitator into the lives of so many people.
I think I never thought of, and I would do talks on and treat my clients this way, there was never a choice between the traditional medicine that we have here in America and the complementary or alternative, whatever the catchword is, it the
it's
herbal.
It's now called medicine. Integrative medicine.
Well, this is what I felt I had to do, because I believe with all my soul from working in the critical care units, I have seen human bodies put back together that should have been in pieces. never make it. But we couldn't make them heal. And I found the key to that little puzzle was the plants. And the plants facilitate the healing. The plants nourish us and help us to heal. I have three children, who their lives were changed by medical intervention, and I could have lost two of them. And we use the plants after the surgeries to build them up and heal them quicker. So there's no reason to say you have to use one or another. You can use both types and incorporate other types of healing and prayer and visualization. You bring it all together. We're whole people, and our heads are connected to our bodies by our necks. So what goes around in your head is going to filter down to your body. Or maybe
Absolutely.
It goes the other way. Maybe it comes from the body to the brain. I don't know.
Isn't it wonderful, Kathy, that, you know, sometimes we think that, you know, we're changing a course of direction in our lives,
mm-hmm.
and yet we find out that everything we've done, all that we've learned, all the critical care, all of the nursing training, everything that you did came together in such a magnificent way, and you were also part of the group of people who, I know that we spoke to Janice Gagne-Noir,
yes.
and her work in having that magnificent legislation passed here in Massachusetts to include aromatherapy and other mm-hmm. other holistic modalities into the nursing licensure. And you were part of that group. And isn't it wonderful how aromatherapy and other mm-hmm. other holistic modalities into the nursing licensure. And you were part of that group. And isn't it wonderful how today nursing can include and can share with patients everything from putting them back together again and cutting things out and putting things in to reinvigorating and remembering the relationship we have with the sun and the earth and the plants,
yes.
who without we could not be breathing and living on this planet.
If the plants didn't work, you and I wouldn't be here because mankind would have died out already.
Right. And
that's
isn't
all yes. they had.
Yes.
We eat them. We are clothed in them. We're housed in the plants, and they're our medicine. And so for me, they ask nothing in return but to teach people to respect them and use them safely, wisely, and respectfully. And so that's part of my job, is to spread. If I learn a lot, if I fill my mind with a lot of knowledge and I fill my mind with a lot of facts, if I don't give it out to clients, to neighbors, to anybody who wants it, if I don't give it out, then it's just accumulating, like junk in the closet. It's just accumulating in me. I have to send it out there. And that may be doing an aromatherapy little M technique massage on somebody's hands, a neighbor who's sick or something. You have to put it out there. Put it out there. And whether they use it or not, it'll come back to you.
I want to ask you a question because you're a plant lover, and
mm-hmm.
I know I share your love for flowers and trees, but what about the weeds, Kathy? Now, I know you have great wisdom about this.
They're the medicine.
We need to talk
friend.
About the weeds because aren't they metaphorical? And what do you have to say
the
about
weeds
the weeds?
The weeds are the medicine. The weeds are the medicine. The plantain that people use, lawn care people to get rid of in their yard. The chickweed. Chickweed lowers the fat content in your blood. Chickweed helps with skin conditions. Chickweed helps with respiratory problems. Plantain. The weed you call weed, it's really a gift. The weed plantain, you chew it up and put it on a mosquito bite or a bug bite and just slap the leaves on there. In 10 minutes, the pain is gone. It's been drawn away. You can look at other weeds. Little lobelia is an annual weed that pops up in the garden. But she's a wonderful remedy for lung congestion, for asthma. She's also the basis of a plant product called lobelin, which people use to help them get off a cigarette.
So which is a medication.
Yeah. The yeah. weeds are our medicine chest.
And what about our wonderful dandelion, which not only is a great
oh,
salad
yeah.
but makes great wine.
Oh yes. And it's a liver cleanser. The root of it we use to cleanse the liver and pull more bile through the system, help with constipation and enhance the activity of the liver, and the leaves we use as a diuretic to help you get rid of excess fluid.
Right, but what I was going for here is I know that you have a great wisdom about the metaphor that nothing really is a weed, that everything is in its right balance with everything else.
We just don't know what it is, so we call it a weed. We say it's a noxious weed, or we say it's useless. It's only our ignorance that says that, because we don't know what to use it for. They're there for a reason. They, all the plants have something to give us. If it's not walking by and running your hand along a rosemary and taking a smell of the essential oils that have burst their sacs into your hand, just to walk through the garden, put it on your face a little bit and feel revitalized, or to pick some weed like comfrey or chickweed or anything that, that you consider a pest, we can find a use for. Even the kudzu vine that is just rampant in the South because it's an imported species, it's not native and it's taken over, they use to help treat alcoholics.
Now, you're doing a lot of teaching for two nurses and four nurses about herbs and also about aromatherapy. Before we take our first break, and then when we come back, we're definitely going to start to talk about your wonderful work and your wonderful story. What kind of courses are you... I know these are approved by AHNA, and these are wonderful courses. Could you tell us about what you're doing for the for nurses?
Yeah, Clinical Aromatherapy for Health Professionals is a course that was begun by Dr. Jane Buckle, and it's endorsed by ANHA, American Holistic Nurses Association. And this course is approved by them, and it's one of the basis of courses for the Massachusetts legislation. So I love teaching it, and I am teaching it to young nurses, to older nurses, because if you use aromatherapy in a hospital situation, you can calm agitation down, you can remove microbes from the air, you can speed wound healing. There's huge amounts of research. Jane Buckle is at UPenn now learning to do research through NIH for aromatherapy. So I'm working hard to get this aromatherapy education out to my fellow nurses and to OTs and PTs, because I really believe that people who are ill need to be touched, need to be stroked, need to, if they don't want you to touch them, you can at least offer them a delightful smell. When we are born, the first thing that happens to us with our first breath is we smell, and hands touch us is the first thing we feel. When we leave this plane and go to the next, I really believe the last thing we should be doing is smell, a beautiful smell, and feel somebody's hands guiding us off of this plane. What's the difference? Life or death? We should be touched, and we should have a beautiful scent in the air. So nurses can do this. Family members can do this. It's, aromatherapy is much more than a pretty smell. It's healing and soothing. These molecules go up your nose, into the brain, and create a chemical cascade that enhances your feeling of well-being, alters your perception of pain, lifts depression, calms you. What a better way to send somebody to the next beautiful world than to usher them out with a beautiful floral scent of something like lavender or ylang ylang. It's just another way.
How exquisitely and eloquently said, Kathy.
Oh,
we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your story. I want to share one little aside.
Mm-hmm.
At Bay State Medical Center, when my sister was having an MRI for her multiple sclerosis, they gave her oil of cucumber to smell before she went into the MRI machine because she has claustrophobia.
Mm-hmm.
So we do find that this is actually starting to catch, and it's the good works of yourself and Dr. Buckle and so many others. So you're to be congratulated for being a wonderful part of the solution. We'll be right back in 2 minutes with more of Kathy Duffy.
This is Sam Hornish Jr. As a champion IndyCar driver, I've had many proud moments, but one of the things I'm proudest of is being part of the Shriners. Shriners Hospitals offer kids with orthopedic problems or severe burns world-class medical care that's totally free of charge. And their centers of excellence combine progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Welcome back to Celebrating Whole Health. This is a program that focuses on reinvigorating, remembering, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person care. We are speaking today to Kathy Duffy, who is a registered nurse with many years of critical care experience, and she is currently an instructor
for clinical aromatherapy programs that are endorsed by the AHNA, and she is a medical herbalist. And more than that, Kathy is also a compassionate and authentic human being whose story today, we're going to be a little bit different than most of our other programs, because the story today is really within the work that Kathy is doing when she's not attending to patients and when she's not instructing nurses in the art of either aromatherapy or medical herbalism. Kathy, you were so kind to share with me your story. I remember when we first started to talk on the phone,
mm-hmm.
I said to you almost immediately, the story is the children from Chernobyl. We kind of bypassed all of your wonderful medical experience and your training and went right to the story, and you later said to me, I was so pleased that you wanted to hear the story. And I said to you, that's what the audience wants to hear. You have done blessed, holy work, and I know that it has been of great value to you. Would you start at the beginning of your story and tell us how you have come to be an angel of mercy for the children of Chernobyl? Each summer, you go to Ireland, and you serve them, and you love them. Could you please tell us your story?
Mm-hmm. Well, my goal behind this is just to share what I've been blessed with. And in 1986, we all know that the reactor in the Ukraine in Chernobyl exploded. It blew the roof off, and this big radioactive cloud went and encircled the globe three times, actually. But the people within that area did not know what happened. So the people who were living there, the governments did not tell them for almost 3 years that they were living on completely contaminated land, but they were farmers. And they knew something was wrong because pigs were being born with six legs, broccolis as big as your kitchen table. Children were being born with eyes on the side of their head and no hands. Horrible, horrible things were happening. And I remember because my daughter, who's 20 now, was 3 years old when this happened. But we've kind of let that go out of the American consciousness. It was a terrible accident. We got over it, and it's all better. But it isn't. So unbeknownst to me, in the year 2000, when I was going online to read an Irish newspaper, which I do because I love Ireland, I saw an article about a group of lay people from Tralee who were going to be bringing an ambulance into Belarus, to the area of the capital, Minsk. And they were driving this ambulance across Europe, and they were carpenters, and they were going to be building a sunroom on an orphanage, because there were children in this orphanage who were so badly deformed they'd never been outdoors, never been in the sun. I almost fell off my chair when I saw that there were children in the year 2000 so badly deformed they could not go outdoors, and so many of them. So I tried to contact the newspaper, The Carryman, and get an idea of who was doing this, because I thought, here I am living in the richest country in the world. I can drum up some money. Again, she doesn't know she can fail. I can drum up some money and help this group. So through a chain of events, I didn't reach the people I was looking for, but friends of mine in Ireland connected me up with a man named Miles O'Brien. And Miles O'Brien was down in Kerry, and he had started an organization called Friends of the Children of Chernobyl. Miles opened my eyes like you pull up a window shade. I had no idea what was happening. I discovered there are 3 million people who were relocated out of what they call the dead zone. It was the area of Belarus equivalent to Arkansas. It was the breadbasket. And the winds brought all this radioactive debris from the Ukraine, which would be like Oklahoma or something, right over the border and dumped most of it in this huge area of Belarus, contaminating the soil for hundreds of thousands of years. So when the government recognized it and decided to do something, because it was kept secret for so long, 3 million people were just evacuated. You go to work one day, a bus comes, picks you up at work, you can't go back home. Your house is contaminated, they tell you, after you've been living there 3 years. Away you go. Pets are left, clothes on the clothesline, money in the house, left. So these families were taken away and relocated. Unfortunately, where they were put, they were talking about a socialistic country, there were other people in line waiting for the apartments who were bumped off the line. So not only were these strangers brought into this cleaner area, they took the homes that were promised for the locals. So there's huge animosity towards the relocated. Miles O'Brien went over 10 years ago to really see what was going on in Chernobyl, because Ireland has a connection over there. Nursing students go to the Chernobyl area and help in hospitals. So Miles had heard all these stories about deformities and radiation and eating contaminated food. And he went, he's a computer fellow, he went with a doctor friend of his. They spoke with doctors, they spoke with healthcare people over there. But what impressed him the most was women on the street coming up to him, knowing he was a Westerner, with their children and saying, take my child away from here. I know you can make my child healthy. Take my child. Take my 10-year-old daughter. We wouldn't let a stranger take our child to the grocery store. Here there were women, parents, mothers, begging Miles to take their children 1,000 miles away. Make them healthy and then bring them back to me. I trust you. He didn't know what to do. So what he, and he couldn't say no. He brought 10 girls home with him on his own credit card. He had no clue how to pay for it. Brought 10 girls back into Kerry. People, neighbors, opened their homes and said, sure, we'll take these extra girls for the month. They'll eat with us. We'll put them in a sleeping bag, put them in the room with the kids. That was the genesis of this organization. And so every year we bring children over from the contaminated areas. We pick a school. We're a small organization. We have 14 different towns under our blanket organization, Friends of the Children of Chernobyl. This summer we brought 300 children over, and then we build them up for a month. We have them for a month. We love them up. We feed them up. We let them rest when they want to rest. They see things they've never seen, like the ocean. They eat fish. They've never had fish in their lives. They eat bananas. One little child ate, sat under a table and ate 14 bananas. Oh, my God. These children eat a pear, and there is nothing left of that pear than the piece of stem. I have seen little boys eat kiwi fruits like we eat an apple, unpeeled. I've seen them eat clementines, peel and all. Their bodies are so desperate for the nutrients. So we feed them and water them and give them everything that you would give your own child for a month, and then we send them back. And we cry a river of tears as we part, because we'll probably never see them again. But when they leave us, they know things. They are healthier. We fix their teeth. We fix their eyes. We fix their facial deformities. We have wonderful doctors and dentists who volunteer their time. We give them glasses that expand as they grow. We send these children back, and they know that there is a life out of Belarus, and that if they stay in school, and we tell them, stay in school, learn English, we'll take you back as an interpreter, because we always bring interpreters, one for every 10 children. They know people out there in the world can love them and care for them without even knowing who they are. And they know there is a different life. You don't have to wash your clothes in a stream. My two girls this summer sat on my kitchen floor to watch the washing machine. They'd never seen a washer. Some of the children we get have never been in a car. They've seen them, but they've never been in a car. The children come over to us, and in my friends in Ireland have a saying, they come over to us in the clothes they're standing in. Maybe an empty little case, maybe a plastic bag. They have just the clothes on their body. One of the girls I brought over this summer was wearing her mother's sandals. They know we will clothe them with hand-me-down clothes, with new clothes. They don't care. They're excited over the wrappers. One of our children brought a box of Rice Krispies home so he could show his mom what he was eating for breakfast. They're just delightful, delightful children, no different than yours, mine. We take them from one school system. We take all the children in fifth grade, because at that age, between 10 and 11, they're prepubescent. And the stress of going into teenage years can drain their already weakened immune systems, and it's usually around 12 to 14 that leukemias start, lymphomas, thyroid cancer. The group we brought over last summer all had thyroid dysfunction. It's the residual, even though it was 16 years ago, the land that they live on will only be half as contaminated as it is today in 24,000 years.
Wow.
So they eat berries that have soaked up radiation. They eat mushrooms that have soaked up radiation. Anya this summer was describing for me the size of potatoes in Belarus. They're still deformed. They're the size of grapefruits, a white potato, the size of a grapefruit. So we do this to buy them time, to help them get into puberty healthier. And so far, we've been about 60% effective to adding 10 years. So 60% of our children who came over 10 years ago are still thriving today. So it's a work that I will have to do until I'm too old to stand up, because it's going to last for 24,000 years. And it's still leaking. Rainwater is, it's a sarcophagus that they poured over it of cement, concrete. And it, like your stairs, it's crumbling. Acid rain makes it crumble. It's leaking. There is a huge amount of nuclear lava in the reactor. And as the water drips through, it's taking this radioactivity, bringing it into their groundwater. So their water's not clean. There is a big fear that this sarcophagus that was made to last 30 years is going to implode within the next 5 or 10 years. So world attention has been focused on it. The Clinton administration promised $9 million for cleanup, but it hasn't been delivered yet. When it implodes, and it will, and it is still burning because they can't put the fire out, we'll hear the story again of another radioactive cloud going around. And the effects of this last forever. There are so many needy children in Africa. With the fighting stops and the rain comes, the children will have more food. In other third world countries, if the situation, the political situation or the natural situation changes, they will be healthier. It will never, never happen in this area of Belarus. This whole group of white Russian people are headed for extinction. And so our little tiny part is to take these children who are sent to us by parents who trust us, take them off an airplane, children who've never ridden in a car. After 20 hours of travel, they come to us and they're raggedy and they have plastic containers and they're wearing their best clothes, plastic containers with their belongings. And in their bags, instead of clothes, are gifts for us, pens that the refill falls out of, little pieces of wood where they've carved a horse, or pictures that they've made, or a piece of glass, cards from the family saying, "Dear Irish friend, thank you for taking care of Anya. Please come to my house and have dinner with me someday." It's, you know, I'm no special person. If you knew about it, if other people knew about it, you can't help but help. We all live in the same house. It's just big. It's called Earth. These are my children. These are your children. These are my neighbor's children. These are our children. And so if I have a loaf of bread, I can give them half of that, and there's still plenty for me. So this is all it is. It's nothing different. You don't have to be a special person to do this. My Irish neighbors open their homes. We're talking about moms and dads with four kids. Just open their homes and add two more places at the table. It's that I always had this saying with my children when they were growing up, there's always room for one more kid at the table when they would bring a friend over for dinner. And that's the Irish way over there. And other countries besides Ireland do it. They do it a bit in France. They do it in Germany a bit, and they do it in England. But we have a country only the size of Maine with a heart as big as America. And that's what drew me, that host families are not paid. We don't give them a cent. We're 100% volunteer. Some of these children grow up having only one hot meal a week, and they come to the table, and my two took pictures of their breakfast. They took pictures of their pancakes on the plate and their oranges and a yogurt, and they would bring the pictures home to show Mama and Papa. That's all it is. It's what, if you knew about it and found out about it the way I did, you would do the same thing that I'm doing.
Well, Kathy, I don't really want to speak because I just want you to keep talking. But and I don't know if there is a person listening who doesn't have a lump in their throat or a tear in their eye, but what is truly special and remarkable is that all of you take these children knowing full well that they are bringing radiation into your life, into your home, into your immune system. And yet, in spite of the very natural and human concern for your own health and your own, you know, we're so worried about bacteria, and
yes.
here these poor children are glowing practically.
Yes. But do you know, I really believe, and I don't want it to sound hokey, but the love that I give them and the love they give me back is going to make, it's going to neutralize it. I mean, it may sound simplistic or childish, but nothing can survive, nothing negative, not radiation, not hatred, not prejudice, nothing can survive when you have on your lap an anorexic, skinny, skinny bag of bones who throws her little arms around your neck and gives you kisses all over your face and says, Kathleen, I like you. What's going to survive? Nothing has the power over that. Nothing has the power. Or you have a little lonely child climb in bed with you at night and say, television? In my bedroom? She's shocked to see a television. Or I give them bubble baths. They're covered in bubbles, and I hear them call me, Kathleen, Kathleen, photography, photography. And you go in, and they're laughing, and there's bubbles everywhere, and they're drowning Barbies in the bathtub, and no radiation's going to survive that. Not even a question. Not even a question. It won't. I'm not in danger. I'm being enhanced. I'm being strengthened. It's not an easy job. It's the hardest thing I have ever done, is to take two children that I don't know, that I don't speak Russian. I speak the amount of Russian that an 18-month-old baby might speak, and explain to them and talk with them. The saddest thing for me is when we go somewhere to the beach, or we go to a park, or we climb a waterfall. And you know how children, when they come home and they're sitting in the car and they want to blabbity, blabbity, blab and tell you their whole story. Oh, Mom, do you remember this? Ooh, do, 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 do. I can't share that with them. So my job this year is to learn more Russian so that I can converse with them and I can share their joy and they can tell me their stories. And they laugh at my Russian, but we make things, we do a lot of sign language and we make things understood between each other, and they will go back. Oh, sorry, dear. What?
Kathy, I can't believe this. I'm looking at, you know, I just looked down at the clock. I am so, as I'm sure our listeners are, I am so enthralled listening to your compassionate voice, your touching story. We need to take a break. When we come back, we want to hear more about this wonderful work, about this wonderful organization, and about these magnificent children. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Celebrating Whole Health. And today we are celebrating the magnificence of the human spirit, the compassion, the love, the true appreciation of what it means to be authentically a human being in a very global sense. It is our just joy and privilege to have Kathy Duffy with us. And Kathy is a most moving and unusual holistic nurse. And I know every one of you listening agrees with me. If you've cleared the lump out of your throat yet, then you're ahead of the game. I'm still reeling from just the incredible story and sharing that Kathy has been doing with us about the children of Chernobyl. Kathy, we're just going to pass the ball to you, and you're going to have the full court to yourself for the next 10 minutes. Please continue to tell us about this wonderful organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got some really funny stories, too, about some of the interactions that go on. But please tell us more about the people involved mm-hmm. with the organization and how people hearing this program can help, what they can do. I know you said, of course, there's always money to be raised because, needless to say, this is all voluntary.
Yes.
Please tell us more about this project and this program.
Well, it is voluntary, and there are a lot of problems, political problems. We have to be very careful. And you're talking about a proud people. So we cannot say in any way, shape, or form to the government, to the children, to the interpreters, we are so great here in the Western world. Look how much we have and how much you don't have. So we have to be very careful not to do things like take pictures of the children or their devastated mouths where teeth come in already decayed because of the radiation. Their new molars already have holes in them, and they crumble. And when you live in Belarus, If you have money, you get medication. If you don't have money, your teeth are extracted with no Novocaine, nothing. So these children, many of them, have had 10 extractions from the time they're 6 years old. We can't take pictures of before and after to try to raise money. We don't try to exploit the children to raise money. We plant seeds. And if people feel moved, I have a website at the shop. They can contact me. I go out once a month, and I volunteer my time to do a presentation and show schools, clubs, organizations, show them what's going on. I have to do this. I have to share. And as much as these children are abysmally poor, they don't know it. Do you know what I mean? Their parents adore them. The Belarusian people have a reputation in the world of being some of the best parents to their children. They believe in keeping the children young and innocent as long as possible because the life is so tough out there. So I have a, say, for example, Anya Sidorevich was the woman, the child who came to me this past summer. Anya was the normal height of a 12-year-old, about almost 4 feet 10 or so. But with all her clothes on, she weighed 60 pounds.
Wow.
She was just so thin. Her family earned about $50 a month. 50 American dollars was the equivalent to their money. The other girl with me, Tanya, her both parents worked, and they earned about $200 a month. She was round. She had round thighs. She had round arms. Anya was just sunken. And we went to a swimming place called the Aquadome where there's slides and wave pools, and they both had bathing suits on for a size 8 child. When Anya ran away from me, the rear end of her bathing suit was flapping against her legs because she just had nothing to fill it out. But when I sent her home, her cheeks were pink, her circles were gone, she had a little poochy tummy. I had to take her pants out, the ones that I had taken in. That's the reward we get, to see a human being, a child, blossom in front of your eyes. It's so selfish of me, but I love it. It just fills me. And to have them sit on your lap and stroke your face, they're extremely affectionate children. To have, we called them home, and Anya and Tanya were neighbors. I let them call home. Some of them share telephones in the neighborhood of their village. And so I put my phone on speakerphone so that both children could hear the other one's parents so they didn't feel so lonely. And they're chatting away. And I heard both fathers at different times on different phone calls say to them, I understood this, do you have a nice Irish family? And both my girls says, niet, niet, papa, which means no, no, daddy. Niet Irish, American. And both fathers did the same noise, and it was, oh. And by the time they'd called a second or third time, I was letting them talk to papa. And Tanya, after the phone conversation, jumped in my lap, covered my face with kisses, and says, Papa, Papa. And it was all kisses from Papa. They understand when we're taking care of their children that we're loving them, and they would do the same to us. They don't have any food. They don't have enough. But if I came to their home or you came to their home, they would collect enough food in the neighborhood to make us a meal. And they would give you the best room in the house, and it might be a dirt floor, and you might have mystery meat in the pot, but they would give you the best that they had. And I think that's what this whole organization is about, and the people that work with us are regular families, and they do this without thinking. It's like, of course, there's always room for one more kid. We'll just take another child. The month that they spend with us in a clean environment can change their whole life. And some of them are still staying with us in Ireland. There are children that we've brought over from an orphanage who were so badly deformed, nobody wanted them. So the proper channels were gone through, and they're still living in Ireland with foster families. It's just that. And there's fun. There's amazing fun. I bring Uno games over. I didn't know what to do when I first started doing this, but I just figured I'll treat them like my grandchildren. So I bring Uno card games over. These kids pick it up. They don't speak the language. They try to teach me the numbers in Russian. And we sit at the kitchen table, and I put my video camera on, and we play Uno. And they're laughing, and they're cheating, and they're teasing me, in Russian, and I have no clue what they're saying. We play Uno for hours. It would be a bribe for bedtime. They'd say, oh, Kathleen, please, tree Uno at 10 o'clock. And I'd say, net, two Uno. Okay. And we'd play two Unos. And when we play, and I always lose. They beat me so bad. They do. And they have these games now. Christina and Ola have brought their Uno games back to, and so did Anya and Tanya, brought them back to the villages. And actually, Christina told me through an interpreter that her neighbor made new cards because the Uno games are so worn out. We can't always know. We can't send things. We can't send them clothes. We can't send them medical supplies. We've sent medical supplies, syringes, and there were no needles. The black market is full of donated products. So the best thing we can do is collect money, put it into a bank account in Ireland that pays for their airfare, that pays for some clothes for them. We usually collect $400 per person, per child. We'll give them airfare, and we'll get us a little bit of money for clothes and whatever else that we can do. But to send items, it doesn't work. I can send them a card with $5, which is a week's pay for some people, and they scan it, and it's stolen. So we have to be very careful and take whatever donated money we get and put it in the bank in Ireland, and it goes to pay their expenses. That's the best way that we can help them, because items are stolen and items are lost. But we're working. We're working at it.
Kathleen, once the children leave you and they go back home,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You said the likelihood is that you would never see them again.
Right.
Can
I will
you
probably
write to the children? Do you all keep in touch with them?
Oh, yes.
Or?
I have a letter right here written by Olga, and she was a child that I had last year, and it says, hello, Kathleen. I'm happy and in good health. I spend 2 weeks with you, which was very good, and I like it very much. I wish I can visit you in Ireland one more time. We have winter vacation coming soon in school. In school, my study goes well. My mom and dad like the picture. There are many of it, and there are pretty. Video cassette we watched over Christine's house. I make a video of them every year and send it to them. And remembered a days we spent in Ireland. Those days spent with you was very good, like fairy tales. Goodbye, Kathleen. Be happy. Love, Olga.
Oh, wow.
And they write to me, and I call them when I'm in Ireland. I get an interpreter and call them and try to speak with them. It's very difficult because they want to come back to me, but if I take my two again or my four again, that's four seats on the plane that children who've never been to Ireland won't have. And if I bring them over at my own expense, what do I do with them? Somebody has to get them to the airport, and many of them don't have cars, and how do I know they'll get from the airport back to their home? It's a conundrum, and I'm learning. This is the heavens teaching me to love with open arms, even if I can't get them back. I just love them for the time I have them and love them by mail at a distance. My friend in Ireland once said to me when she heard what I was doing, and I was so excited over it and talking about taking more, and she looked at me and she said, Kathleen, you can't put your arms around the world. I said, you're wrong, Anne, I can. And that's what this doing. I have to learn to love with open arms. I can't have them, but I can love them, and I know they love me.
Well, I think your heart is big enough to wrap your heart around the globe, and this is the kind of, I think this is the kind of intentionality that we know is in the heart of all good people, and we assume that all human beings have that potential for goodness. So to hear this story, to hear your voice, to hear your sincere humanity is inspirational, and it is food for our soul. And we're going to go to a break, and we're going to come back in 2 minutes, and we hope that you will continue to nurture us and share the magnificent, unconditional love that you have put out into the world. We'll be right back. We are back with Kathy Duffy. Kathleen is such a loving and centered human being that her comment is, It doesn't matter if I'm speaking or if anyone is speaking on behalf of the children. This is their voice. If you are out there and you are as moved and have interest and time and resources to help assist these children, we want to know, Kathleen, where can people reach the organization? How can they reach you? What can people do very directly to assist in inviting these children into life?
They can. My husband and I are the U.S. representatives of Friends of the Children of Chernobyl. And they can contact us through the website at our shop, and that's www.theherbarium.com. There's a link directly to the Friends of the Chernobyl Children of Chernobyl's website through our shop. They can contact me, leave a message, and I will call you back at area code 413-594-8447. I am working on bringing a tour group over. I brought one over last year, a benefit tour group, a 6-day tour of Ireland, and part of your fee goes directly to the Friends of the Children of Chernobyl. I brought a busload last year. I'm going to bring another busload this year in May. We have a beautiful tour of ancient sites, and Miles O'Brien is the tour bus driver, and he sings and he knows history, and $100 out of your ticket price goes directly to the children. You can also email me at aromaherb, A-R-O-M-A-H-E-R-B, 123@AOL.com. That's about the best way to reach us.
Kathleen, where is the greatest need for these children? Is it to have the ability for the organization to fly the children into Ireland?
Yes.
From what it sounds like, there are many open hearts and open homes in Ireland as well as in other parts of Europe. Is the need to get the airfare?
Yes.
If there's an airline out
yes.
there listening,
yes.
if there are people who have the ability to
right.
facilitate,
to.
Is this what we're looking at? Are we looking at getting them from Belarus to Ireland?
To getting them from Belarus to Ireland for the month of July. We take them that month because the heat, they have very hot, muggy summers like we do here in Massachusetts. The heat releases more radiation from the ground. So when they go out to play, it's like having a chest x-ray all day long. So we take them at the most dangerous time of the year and bring them to Ireland. And what we need is some kind of sponsorship. We have to go so far. We've had to go with the Belarusian airlines. But if we can have somebody who will sponsor or give us a voucher or a receipt for clothing, that we can get them some new clothes, because it comes out of our pockets. We can't send them home with more than 2 small bags, because at the airport, if we send them back home with more than 40 pounds of goods, it gets confiscated. It's a very difficult, touchy situation, but what we need, I told St. Francis the last time we had a talk, is I need money. I told St. Francis I needed $50,000 to be put in the fund for the Friends of the Children of Chernobyl. And St. Francis said, okay, I'll do the best I can. But that's what we need, is we need to have the funds, we need to have money so this group can continue on. We do plays, we do bake sales, we have a jar at the shop. I go to schools and children will have a car wash and give us the money, and it's $100 here and $400 there, $1,000 here. When Miles O'Brien and I spoke on the radio for the first time in March of 2000, when I went to Ireland in June, just from the radio listeners, we had over $6,000. It was amazing. The big hearts that people have here in America. We're just looking for, if everybody in America gave us a dollar, we'd be set for the next 100,000 years. It's not a lot of money. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, and we need to be able to get these children safely from Belarus to Ireland. If somebody donated an airplane, that would be wonderful. We'd have to see what kind of channels and hoops we'd have to jump through to use it, but anything's possible.
Well, Kathy, I want to remind you, and don't yell at me because I'm not drawing a parallel, because I know how very humble you are. But big things start in small ways. I've always been, and I'm sure many of our listeners are, an admirer of the very remarkable Mother Teresa, who started off with a pail and a pair of sandals.
That's
and
right.
Two saris, and saw the need of the most desperate and the most poor and suffering souls on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And from that unconditional love, from that enormous compassion, we know what her legacy is. And this kind of love, this kind of work, this kind of compassion is what every single one of us, and I'm sure there are children living in parts of America today who need that same kind of nurturance, mm-hmm. the kind of love that you're offering, the kind of care, the kind of open-heartedness is something that is not just for the children of Chernobyl. And what you bring to this program today is such a reminder that this unconditional love, this enormous understanding of what we're here for, of what we have all been placed on the planet to do, you have manifested that with Miles and all these other extraordinary people and all of those who help. And isn't that what each one of us, those of us who are hearing your voice, who are hearing your heart, isn't that what we're all invited to do?
Yes, and we can all do it. When that little door opens, you just need to take a deep breath and go through it. And I really feel half of the strength comes from not knowing that anything could go wrong. I mean, you and I and everybody listening out there, we have the capacity to help our world family. And when the opportunity comes up, take a breath and step through the door and say, okay, I know this is a good thing to do and God is with me. And that's how you do it. You just take that step. Don't worry about the outcome. Put the blinders on. My intention is to help these children, and I will be helped in that intention, and we will do it. And I will be able to do more because you have so graciously invited me to speak on it. You've given me the time. You've done a wonderful service, Georgiana, by giving the children this forum. So many people are going to hear about the children, our little lost children, who never would have heard about it before. They never would have heard about it before. So we have a radio station doing God's work. That's really lovely. That's love. That's unconditional love right there, going out. We're changing the world one person at a time, and there is nothing that can withstand the power of love. Nothing.
Kathy, we're not going to take the last public service announcement break because you have just given us probably the most important and magnificent and eloquent public service announcement that we could have ever dug up and put on the air. I think what you're saying, and I do want to acknowledge the power of media, and today that nursing community reached out in a very big way through your wonderful work and your good heart to wrap itself around the children of Chernobyl. And as we close, because we only have maybe another minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
I would like you to repeat again the phone numbers, the website, how people can reach you.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell them about your radio show. Kathy has her own radio program. It's a local radio program. I don't know if unfortunately they're not going to be able to hear you across the country because it is local.
Right.
But if you give us all that information,
oh my God.
We've got about 2 minutes left.
All Kathy. Right. They can hear the radio show or have a neighbor hear the radio show or a friend hear it. We broadcast from Springfield, Mass, up into New York State, Vermont, New Hampshire, Connecticut. And it is Saturday morning on WHYN radio. That's 560 AM, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock every Saturday morning. It's called Herbs for Health and Healing. To reach me, to hear more about the children, to hear about the radio show, you can go to www.theherbarium.com. That is THEHER. B-A-R-I-U-M IUM.com. You can contact me at area code 413-594-8447. That's our answering machine at the shop on 24 hours if you want information on clinical aromatherapy courses or the children or whatever. If you want to join our May tour, going to Ireland in May 2004. You can also reach me on the internet at aromaherb, A-R-O-M-A-H-E-R-B, one word, 123, at AOL.com.
Kathy, I cannot thank you enough on behalf of the radio station, the program, and our listening audience for coming on today.